So next we're going to have Representative Sharon, I'm sorry, the middle name is England. England, is that correct? England Treat. She's in her 22nd year as Maine legislator, including 8 years in the Senate. She co-chairs the Maine Citizen Trade Policy Commission and Insurance and Financial Services Committee. Treat directs the National Legislative Association on Prescription Drug Prices. That's interesting. And serves on a USTR Advisory Committee. So hopefully you have a front door to some of the issues that are going on. She has an AB from Princeton University, Woodrow Wilson School of Public and International Affairs, and a JD with honors from Georgetown University Law. So let's welcome her. Thanks. And we will have questions, a series of questions, and we'll be doing the discussion at the end of all the presentations.
Thanks. Great. Thank you very much. I'm very pleased to be here and to get into this topic. I do wear a lot of hats. Almost none of them come with remuneration. So, is it this here? Okay. So, there you have it. No remuneration. I just want to reiterate something that was said earlier. Trade agreements are negotiated in secret. I do sit on an advisory council committee where I get to sometimes look at text that's being considered to being presented by the U.S. Trade Representative, USTR. But just so that you know, nothing in my presentation comes from anything that I've seen there. It's all based on leaked text, or actually I often find out more from hearing from reporters in the trade press than I get on my advisory committee. So, just as an overview, you know, how do U.S. states engage in trade policy? You know, what are states up to very quickly on tobacco regulation? What are some of the agreements that are being negotiated right now? How might those agreements be used to challenge state regulation? What are some alternatives that are being considered right now relating to tobacco in the TPP? And I think that we'll hear about that from some others as well. And then just kind of like, where are we right now? What's a snapshot on that? Just a little bit about what is the state government role in trade policy. Basically, not much. We do have this formal role. It's a formal committee. But there are multiple 20-plus committees with over 600 advisors. Almost all of them represent corporations. Almost none of them represent states or public policy organizations or people, you know, who work on public health, for example. I am an exception that proves the rule. That's me in Peru. I got some money to go down there and talk during a stakeholder presentation. But in general, there's only a few representatives that on these committees that really are well aware of the underlying issues. Yet state laws, like federal laws, can be challenged and have been challenged in trade disputes. Maine is one of a couple of states that has a special dedicated commission looking into these issues. If you're looking for things to do, this would be a very smart thing to do, which is to get your state to have a commission that actually looks at how does trade policy affect our domestic regulation and legislation, which it does in many, many areas. So just a reminder, we hear a lot about FDA this, FDA that, but in fact the tobacco settlement of 1998 is what gave the FDA its initial authority that was then put into legislation at the federal level. The states retained much authority. They continue to reach out and work in areas where the federal government either is never going to get there or is going to be very slow at getting to that regulation. So what happens in the states is important in terms of public health, and what happens to state regulation with respect to the impact of trade policy is also very important for that same reason. So here are some areas. I'm going to go into a little more detail, but many of you are probably more aware than I am. I don't work full time in tobacco policy, but these are some of the areas where states have gotten involved either preceding the FDA regulation or these days. Everything about tobacco sale and use, bans on products, internet sales restrictions, billboards, enforcement, tax policy, you name it. So just as an example, I come from the state of Maine, so I'll use that as an example. Here's some of what we do. Tobacco specialty stores regulating age, for example. Talking about who can you sell to, prohibition on flavored cigar distribution, hookah use. I went to the presentation this morning on tobacco use through hookahs and little cigars. This is an area where the federal government is not active. The states are, to the extent that anybody is, and it's basically somewhat unregulated. Advertising aimed at kids, this was our attorney general going after a Joe Camel cartoon that was in Rolling Stone. And so that's an area. Vermont, similarly, I've given presentations there, so I looked up their laws. Interestingly, they have a law focused on organic tobacco and telling people that it's a very organic state, Vermont, telling people that no, just because it says it's organic doesn't mean it's good for you. So that's an example. You know, internet ban is one of the things that they have in Vermont. Here's some other examples. Tobacco placement, very important, 27 states, 48 regulate vending machines, including Idaho, completely bans them. 23 states and D.C. that restrict tobacco samples. I'm whipping through this, as you can see. And just, this is important when we get to talking about what is the federal government thinking about doing, maybe about protecting tobacco regulation. These are some of the agencies at the state level that are involved in tobacco control and regulation and enforcement. They are not just public health agencies, as you will see here. They include everything from, you know, the AG's office, retail and convenience stores. Every time I go into my local convenience store and see the giant exhibit of blue electronic cigarettes, every morning when I pick up my paper, that's what I think is, oh, why aren't we doing something about this? So this is where states are playing in terms of tobacco regulation. Okay, super quick, there's two big agreements right now that are under negotiation. One is the Trans-Pacific Partnership. This is my map. It actually comes from Celeste Drake of the AFL-CIO, showing in yellow the current TPP countries, and then in orange some that are talking about maybe joining, 12 countries participating in that right now. After 3 years of negotiation, it will affect tobacco regulation. The other is the transatlantic, and they call it TTIP, very confusing, TPP, TPIP. I mean, thing about trade policy is there's like a zillion of these initials out there, very confusing. It's the US-EU agreement, just started negotiations. Those are all the countries that are part of the EU. So you put the two together, you've heard about, you know, Doha Round, WTO, all this falling apart. Well, you put these two agreements together, and what do you have? Most of the world. Okay, so there are within the Trans-Pacific Partnership, there's 29 different chapters. Most of those have nothing to do with trade per se. They have to do with regulations. And there's at least five that have some very direct effect on tobacco regulations in the states and federal government. And they are these: investment, intellectual property. You see the Marlboro brand there. That's trademark. That means intellectual property. Services, we'll talk a bit about that. Technical barriers to trade and regulatory coherence. Chris talked about the investor-state dispute settlement. Again, this is a huge deal. This is what Philip Morris is using right now to challenge Australia's plain packaging regulations. It doesn't go to court. Actually, it did go to court. They didn't like the result, so they go to the trade court, which is not a court, but it's an arbitration panel with three trade lawyers who spend all of their time working on international trade, often for the people that are now coming before them, are now the judges. So that's my view of that. Okay, well, here's the question. Are state tobacco laws vulnerable to trade-based challenges? I think you have to say, yes, they are. We don't know that Philip Morris is going to win its challenge. We don't know that these cases will be won, but we do know that they're vulnerable to being challenged, and that costs tons of money. Nobody is paying the state costs if a state law is challenged. The federal government is supposed to represent us. We don't represent ourselves directly, but it works very much as a burden on what states might do. So some of the things that international trade agreements affect our trade in goods and services and investments. One of them would be, say, products. Can you ban a product? There's been rulings about banning products not being okay. Well, if you're banning flavored cigars, okay, if you're banning flavored cigars, then that might be an issue. Technical barriers to trade, it's about what is the formulation of a product. Well, Malaysia has talked about not allowing proprietary formulas to be made public. Well, if you have a state rule about what is the formulation of this product and labeling and things like that, that's an issue. Cross-border trade in services, an example here, vending machines. Trade in services, what is a service? Distributing tobacco would be an example of a service. Vending machines are an example of a way that you would distribute tobacco. Banning a vending machine would be a state rule that might raise some questions if you don't allow banning something. So here's just a graphic, and I'm going to give Bob Stumberg of Georgetown Law School credit, just showing you visually some of the laws that states have that they might want to fight out more, and they might want to get involved in these negotiations to make sure that these laws don't get challenged. So they include disclosure of contents, flavored tobacco product bans, vending machines, internet sales. So I'm probably not going to have time to talk about the competing tobacco proposals. I'll just say the U.S. proposal does not do anything. The Malaysia proposal actually carves out and protects tobacco regulation, so it does something. I don't have time to go through them, but I do have handouts. I think this is an important point. Some people are saying there was an earlier U.S. tobacco proposal, and it had all kinds of different provisions. So some people are saying, and there was a lot of criticism about that at the time it came out. This is a great negotiation strategy. So then they come out with something that's like really, really weak, and all these people are saying, oh, well, let's go back to that other one, which they didn't like in the first place. So here's my bottom line about that. This is that other one. It never covered any state regulation ever, number one. And number two, it never covered any investor state challenge, which is the company's challenge. So it's useless, okay? So I've made that point. Okay, so the status of negotiations, 3 years, 19 rounds, it's in the end game. That means they're trading off dairy versus tobacco, whatever. Watch out, things happen. But things can be done. Here's a list of the organizations that have come out in favor of a carve-out. Here are three state organizations that have come out in favor of a carve-out. We've got newspapers and more. You'll hear more from them. And I just want to end on this note. This is me and the two previous chairs of the Trade Commission in Maine. One of us is a Republican. Two of us are Democrats. We have had the same policies coming out of that commission over the last 10 years, ever since it's really been established. And this is our opposition to fast track, again, bipartisan, unanimous. There are some areas where people can work together, whether you're Tea Party or Liberal Democrat, and this may be one of them. So that's my hopeful ending to this story.
So thanks very much, Sharon. That was a great presentation, especially in relation to how progressive states and even counties can be in tobacco control and how trade law can still represent a challenge to those. And just a personal note, I also presented at the stakeholder meeting in San Diego for TPPA. They scheduled us at the very beginning of the morning, and none of the U.S. representatives came, and, you know, it's kind of a boat and pony show.